All right, Luke 10:38. Now, as they were traveling along, he entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister called Mary, who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me." But the Lord answered and said to her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary hath chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her." Okay, you look at these two women, and we see one commended and one mildly reproved. But they're both good women, both of these. We see in the text, of course, the commendation of Mary, and there's other text about Mary. The same thing with Martha. In the text, you see that she's hospitable, diligent to try to provide rest and a good meal for Jesus. Jesus often traveled, and it would be a welcome. He had no home of his own, to our knowledge. And to come into her home and sit down at the table and be refreshed with a good meal and good company is always a blessing. She was willing to do that. We see in John 11 about the raising of Lazarus, her brother, that she was a woman of faith. And so it's not that you have a bad woman and a good woman. You have two good women. But there's a difference, and this is so vital for you and me. Here we are gathered in this class. You're members of a local church, and in that congregation are good people. But sometimes good people need this lesson that has to do with priorities. And we see that in this particular text. So it's a good study for all of us to take stock about ourselves. All right, so first question here on your lesson. You're standing in the room watching all that's going on. You're just observing. How did you describe in your own words what was going on? Yes, Don?
I can see her internal struggle. I haven't gone to the grocery store. I don't. What am I going to feed him? I want to feed him something special. And so that may be where her source of anxiety is coming from.
Yeah, I wondered about that. If she knew he was coming, whether she did or didn't, she's still very occupied about this meal. And Don has presented a woman's perspective. If a guest comes in that you're not expecting, especially someone you value, you know, you want to prepare a good meal, and that's on your mind, and that may have something to do with it. But so you're standing in the room and you're watching Martha, and she's doing her very best to see that the table is ready and the food is ready. And what else are you observing as you look at this scene?
As this is happening, if I understand it right, Jesus is teaching. And so as she's kind of scurrying around work, she's got her focus one place when her focus really should be on what the master has to say.
Okay. And as he's teaching, what do you see?
Her sister, not
helpful. Her sister sitting there listening to Jesus. Man, it's time for supper. And so you can see Martha said, "Tell her to help me." And it's interesting, I put on your lesson, Young Little Translation. This is one of the values of comparing translations. It says, Mary, who also having seated herself. And there is a word in the text for that word also. The King James, New King James, the New American Standard 77 version has moreover. But the New King James, and ASV also has the word also in it. Now, when you add that in there, when it says in the text then that Mary, who also having seated herself, so She had a sister called Mary who also seated herself. What does that suggest?
That Martha was there, but she kept being distracted and getting up and leaving, probably.
Okay, had she been seated too, maybe?
Probably
also seated herself. So what you see as you're watching this, there would be times you're watching this, evidently both women were sitting there listening to Jesus. But Martha keeps getting up and leaving. And you notice in verse 40 it says, she has left me. And I put in your notes, I think I did in your lesson, that I put on that way that's written, it means she keeps on leaving me. And so here Martha and Mary both, I guess, are doing something for the meal. But Mary, you look around, where is she? Where is she?
Yeah. Would also maybe suggest also there are other people there?
Maybe, but that's possible, but there's no focus of others. As far as sitting there, but there's nobody else mentioned. There probably were other people there, but the focus of these two women, it can't be certain about that, but, sir?
About verse 38, I mean, just they were they went, said that they were traveling along, finding more than one.
Yeah, there were probably other people there. That's a good point. But, so here, they're sitting there, and, I mean, they're working on supper, Mary and Martha, and then Martha looks around, where's Mary? She keeps leaving Martha. To do what?
Listen.
Go sit at the table and listen to Jesus. And boy, this is really bothering Martha. You got two words on your lesson, worried and bothered. That word bothered suggests agitation, trouble, really troubled about this. And you ladies, especially if you had a sister who wasn't very helpful, or somebody else in the house, you can probably really appreciate this. You know, my wife and the home she grew up in, her folks had three of their grandchildren living with them, and they were all supposed to help with supper. And every time it came time to clean the dishes, one of them always had a bathroom problem. Amazing. Where is she? Oh, she's in the bathroom. Well, you know, here's Mary and Martha working on supper, and Mary keeps leaving, and she's going back listening to Jesus. And so, the way we look at it, what would, you know, if we were there, who would we be talking to? Trying to get them straightened up.
The other way around.
Yeah, probably the other way around. Mary, get up and go help your sister. And this is no excuse for laziness. This text, it cannot be used to justify, well, it's time to do the dishes. It's time to cook the supper. I'm going to go read my Bible. That's not what this text is about. And to use it that way is a misuse of this text. But this is an opportunity. It's not just sitting down and listening to one of the disciples. It's the master, the king, is in your home. And he's teaching. And he's not teaching about cooking. He's not teaching about how to keep house. He's not teaching about the Roman government. He's teaching as he did on his mission about why he's here, his purpose, his coming. Yes, sir.
I was reminded about the statement about Jesus Christ and that he talked like no other man. You know, nobody else.
That's a good point. Yeah, the officers came back at one time when they were sent to arrest Jesus, and their superior said, "Why didn't you bring him?" We've never had anybody talk like this. We're just so impressed with what he had to say. That's a good point, Ennis. Yes, sir.
Well, we also have to think of, and, you know, a few years back, like you said, we would have thought this way. The women's job would be to be fixing the dinner while the guys sit around and talk, you know.
Well, they wouldn't have been talking here, though, Ronnie. They'd have been watching the chariot races.
Yeah. In their culture, the idea that Jesus would take women as a disciple might have been somewhat unusual.
That's an interesting point. That's right. When he was talking to the woman at Samaria, what are the disciples? What was their reaction?
They were amazed.
They were amazed. Not only that she was a Samaritan, but that she was a woman. And here out in public, he's talking to her. And that's a good point Ronnie makes. So, in any case, that's the kind of setting that you see here. Maybe where other people were there, as Joel suggested, and also verse 38 possibly suggests. But Mary also was seated at the Lord's feet, along maybe with others. But then the next thing you know, Martha's busy with the preparations. Now, on your question number two, Martha, it says, was distracted, is what this version says. The King James and American Standard use a different word. It says cumbered. So let's look at the word distracted. What kind of definition did you find for that?
It's a thing that prevents someone from giving full attention to something else.
Very good. Something that keeps you from giving full attention to something else. So it wasn't that Martha didn't occasionally join the discussion or the teaching session. It wasn't that she maybe wasn't trying to listen as she went by, but she couldn't give her full attention to it. She's distracted. You know, you can sit in an assembly like this, or a class, or a class where a sermon or an assembly or a sermon is being preached. You may get some, but if you're thinking about other things, job, investments, pleasure, what you're going to do later, whatever, you can be distracted and you can't concentrate on what's important. And so that's an excellent definition. Yes, Ennis? Okay, and again, I don't want to picture Martha as a bad woman, and it's not that at all. She is a woman of faith, but as Ennis suggested, maybe she's trying to listen in, but it's just not the focus right now, and this is not a lesson, again, on whether you should cook a meal, ladies. That's not it, so don't go home and use this with your husband and say, see, I shouldn't be cooking, I ought to be reading my Bible. Take me out tonight. That's not what this is for. But it is a lesson about priorities. And it's from our Lord and Master. And so, yes, sir?
Steve, I was just going to say, another important thing to see is that not only is she distracted and not focused, her priorities are not there, but she's also encouraging her sister to be the same way when she doesn't see what she's doing is not proper.
Okay, good point. That's a good point. What effect would it have on others there? Right. And if there were others there, like it's been suggested, about what about the rest of them? And so the valuable lesson for all that were in the room. You know, you go home and you're going to study the Bible. How do you study? Where do you study? Do you study in front of the television? Hey, ball game's on. Yes, Betty? Yeah, she knew. I don't know what, but she knew who Christ was. That's clear in John 11. But apparently, at this point at least, she felt like there was something more important for her focus, being given this golden opportunity. And you know, you sit down to study, and you got this. There's a ball game on, or something else. Are you distracted? I don't know. People are different. Joel's here this morning. When Joel was home. As a teenager, and I had a room out in the garage, and so he'd do his homework. Well, of course, all the people up and down the street probably knew he was doing his homework because of the music it was on. And Pat would say, tell him, turn that music off. He can't study that way. Yeah, he could. That helped him study. I like music or some kind of background when I study, but not everybody that way. My wife wants it quiet. You know, she don't even want the crickets chirping. She just wants it quiet when she studies. But it depends on the person. Somebody up here had a comment. Was that you, Melanie? Mm-hmm. No, who said something up here?
Lisa.
Oh, Lisa. Sorry.
To me, it seems like
by her asking Jesus to ask Mary to help her, she obviously thought she was in the right and that she was the one that was doing what was supposed to be done. That just shows that, you know, just because we think that's what's right, it not necessarily is.
Good point. Yeah, she's probably taken aback by Jesus' remark, wasn't she? She apparently thought the Lord would say, get up from here and go help your sister, but that didn't, not the way it worked. Good point. Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, Martha welcomed him. That's what it says in verse 38. Good point. Yes, Ronnie?
Well, even though he doesn't use the actual phrase, this kind of reminds me of one of those not but things. There was absolutely nothing wrong with what Martha was doing. She was preparing a meal for the Lord and Master, and it had to be done, and it had to be kept up. Just didn't understand that the emphasis that Mary had placed on this was more important.
You know, you wonder, that's a good point, Ronnie, and you wonder if there is more to this than this one incident. You know, we've been learning as we study these incidents in Jesus' life that he knows us within and without. He knows what we need. And you wonder if this is not more than a one-time incident with Martha, if this is some lesson she needed overall about the focus of her life. Again, a woman of faith, a woman of service, she welcomed Jesus into her home. But what's important about life? The word cumbered. Did you look up the word cumbered? What does that mean?
Overloaded or burdened.
Overloaded or burdened. You ever feel overloaded or burdened? I want you to note something in this text. It says, you're worried and bothered about what? T-H-I-N-G-S. Things. Tell you what, folks, that's what gets us in trouble all the time. Things. Innocent things. Good things. But so often, we're so weighted down with things, either acquiring them or protecting them or preserving them or whatever it may be. And it takes time and it takes energy. It takes focus. And there's only 24 hours a day. Somebody said, I don't have time. No. We all have the same amount of time. Every one of us. Nobody's got more than 7 days a week. No one's got more than 24 hours a day. It's how we allot our time. It's not a matter of not having time. It's how we use it. And so we can get so burdened with things that they distract us from the more important priorities of life. And so it's interesting to see this word has translated in these different versions. And remember, this is not some preacher who, you know, say, yeah, it's good for him to talk about that. He sits over in an office and studies. And no, this is Jesus Christ warning about our obsession with things and how to get in the way of spiritual priorities. Jesus, number three, said Martha was worried. The New King James says careful. Doesn't carry that connotation with us anymore. And so the other versions, later versions, put worried or anxious, American Standard Version, and bothered about so many things. Very interesting, this word worried, it's actually from a word that means peace. And you can say, and those who know the language in the study I did say, you could put it this way. She's going to pieces. She pulls in every direction. So, I got the meal. There's Jesus. There's the stuff in the microwave. Oh, they didn't have a microwave, did they? And there's all these things going on. And maybe there's other guests. And life is complex. You know, if you're a man, you got your job, you got your car, you got your yard, you got your kids, you got football or baseball or something. And you got all of that. And then if you're a woman, you've got your kids and maybe your grandkids, your house, and your meals and your curtains and your floors and whatever. They're just a lot of pieces. And what happens, we can be pulled in every direction instead of having a focus, being single-minded about what's important. What are you going to let go? I can't let the floors go. Oh, can't let the bills go. Oh, can't let the yard go. Oh, can't let the ball game go. What are you going to let go? And so she's worried. And that word comes from that very idea of pieces. I look up the word worry. Very interesting word, the English word. In its origin, as it developed down through the years, it had developed a sense, I thought very interesting, to grasp by the throat with the teeth and lacerate. In its history of meaning, at one time it was like it just gets a hold of you. I'm going to get your attention. That's what worry will do. And it came to mean, as it's translated today and as we use it, be anxious or worried. But it's just an interesting word. And so we ask the question, in the context, what is Jesus cautioning against? What is he cautioning against? In Matthew 6:33. Look at Matthew 6:33. What's he cautioning against?
The cares of the world taking over your focus as opposed to eternal life.
Okay, very good. Cares of the world taking over your focus as opposed to eternal life. What's the word that goes all the way through this section from verse 25?
Worried
or anxious. Here it is again. And what's interesting as you look at this text, verse 32, the Gentiles, what do they do? Seek after what?
Things.
Yeah, I know there's things like, you know, chariots with nice spokes and big houses on the hill. But look at the things he's talking about in verse 25. What kind of things? Food and clothing. Oh, that's that meal Martha's worried about. Food and clothing. Basics. And he said, the Gentiles, that's what their life's about. That's what they think about. That's what they spend their time on. And so, it's all about things. And so what he says in verse 21, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. It's not reversed. Where your heart will be, there your treasure is. No, it's where your treasure is, what you value, that will capture your thinking, your heart. That's the danger of this. And that's what Jesus is warning about. In verse 24, he says, what it will also do is cause you to be devoted to that which you treasure. He said, no one can serve, talking about service, two masters. What do you serve? We talked about a while ago, what do you set aside? What do you let go and what do you devote yourself to? No one can serve two masters. So the world is seeking things. What am I seeking? What's most important to me? And then, in verse 33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. That is, his rule in your heart and life. Now, it's interesting that in verse 30, what does he say people who don't have this attitude, how does he picture them? Little faith. Did they not believe Jesus was alive and standing there in front of him? They did. What does he mean, little faith? Don't trust him for what?
To take care of them?
Look, seek the kingdom and his righteousness. What have you got to believe to do that?
Who he is.
Got to believe who he is, and I'll tell you what you got to believe. That his rule is more important to you than anything you can ever own, any job you can ever have, any meal you can ever cook. His kingdom and his righteousness is the most valued possession you can ever have. Look at Luke 12. Remember the story about the rich man who spent all his life on his barns and crops? And you look in Luke 12, 28 again, he says, "You men of little faith." And look down in verse 31, "Seek his kingdom." He says in verse 33, "Sell your possessions." Why would you do that? "Because you have an unfailing treasure in heaven." Do you really believe? Here this man's worried about the inheritance. He can't keep his mind on what Jesus is talking about. "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." That's pretty important, isn't it? He was evidently a wealthy man. Maybe his brother was a wealthy man. But Jesus says, what is really valuable to you? Is it Christ ruling your heart every day? Becoming to be more what He wants you to be, to live like He wants you to live, to think like He wants you to think? Or is it, you know, school or work or friends or whatever? What a great lesson for us today. Living in the United States of America, we're prosperous, we're free, we have blessings on every hand. You know, we start the Bible class and everybody's looking at that phone. Everybody's got one of those smartphones, I guess, you know. We're blessed. But we can be so obsessed with things that we don't have the focus on the spiritual. And Mark 4, look at Mark 4. Here we have the parable, we call it the parable of the sower. One of the four kinds of soil in verse 7 is the seed that fell among the thorns. The thorns came up and choked it. In verse 18 and 19, he tells what he means by that. Now he said in verse 7, it choked the seed. What choked it? According to 18 and 19. The worries, what? The worries of the world. The deceitfulness of riches. And what's that last one? Desire for other things. Isn't this interesting? In this incident with Mary and Martha, he's warning about things. In Matthew 6, he's warning about things. And here again, he's warning about things. Things that are good in and of themselves. Nothing wrong with these things. But the desire for them, either acquiring them or preserving them or protecting them or whatever it may be, enjoying them, choke the word. What's the result, did he say? Become unfruitful. And that's what happens too many times with God's people. They're baptized, they get into Christ, and they're going about their life. They don't grow, they don't study, they don't. Hey, I've got things I've got to do. 5 years, 10 years, 15 years later, they're still unproductive. Or maybe they get productive and then they get obsessed with things again. It's a dangerous thing. It's something that we need to see the Lord's warning here and how important it is to us. In our text back in Luke chapter 10, he told Martha, verse 42, only one thing is necessary. Wait a minute. Isn't food and shelter necessary? Is it? It is, isn't it? You're not going to listen to Jesus' teaching very long if you don't eat. Yeah, it's necessary, but it's a relative thing, isn't it? What's really important? What's really necessary? Here's the table fixed. And as Betty commented, they didn't have what we've got today, you know. So here Martha's been working. Maybe they've been working all day getting this meal ready. I can remember my wife's mother on Sunday. She'd fix the table, and she'd, of course, they had a big family. They'd have maybe two or three meats and several kind of vegetables, and maybe several desserts, and spend hours preparing these meals. But there's just really one thing that's necessary, that's important. It's not that physical food, but it's the spiritual food. Physical food will do what?
Perish.
What?
Perish.
Physical food will perish? All right, good. What benefit is it?
Nurture the body.
Give you life and strength. What about the food Jesus is offering? Eternal life. Life for the soul. Look at John 6. It's interesting to me, and maybe you'll find it interesting as well, is that this lesson that we're looking at, this commendation that Jesus has for Mary, and this mild warning to Martha, is something that you see in various settings throughout his ministry, the same kind of warning and teaching. In John chapter 6, in verse 26, you know these people, had they tasted food that Jesus had anything to do with? Yes, they had, across the sea. That's probably the best fish and loaves they ever ate. And so he comes across the sea, and they follow him. They follow him across the sea. And you think, boy, these are really disciples of Jesus. But Jesus is never fooled about our purposes and motives. In verse 26, here's one of those cases Ronnie was talking about earlier. While we don't have it in our text we're studying this morning, you see that very usage of that figurative language right here. He said, verse 26, "Truly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw signs." Did they seek him because they saw signs? Yes, they did. That's why they come across the lake, the sea. Sure they did. But the signs had a purpose, and it wasn't to feed people. There is an element of compassion, no doubt, but it had a higher purpose. And that purpose was to confirm who he was. And so not because you saw the signs and they produced some faith in you, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Your focus was on the material. You completely lost the spiritual scope of what took place. And so do not work for the food which perishes. Oh, you see people like that under the bridge all the time, don't you? We go up to HEB and there's this old fellow sitting there with his dog. I guarantee he don't work. He just asks for handouts. Say, boy, he's a biblical guy, isn't he? No. Do not work for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to eternal life. You know, you think of some of the great men in the Bible. Spiritual men were busy men. When the Lord called Moses, what was he doing?
Tending sheep.
He was a shepherd. He was busy. When the Lord called David, he was a shepherd, wasn't he? And you look, you know, Amos was a picker of fruit. And you just find these men in the Bible. God said, okay, I want you. And put them to work. And so it's not against working. It's just that there's a higher purpose for us being on this earth. And so he said, you didn't seek me because of what I can do for your soul, but what I can do for your body. And so you get down to verse 67 and 68. You know, these people left you. I'm not going to go into this too much because I plan on preaching on this text this morning. But verse 67 and 68, of course, many left him, you see. Verse 66 or 67, Jesus asked the 12, "You do not want to go away also, do you?" Simon Peter answered to him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of a different kind of life." Eternal life. It's not just duration of life. It's a kind of life. It's a fellowship with God that far exceeds the life on this earth. And so here again you see this lesson on priorities that we've been seeing in text after text. Back in our text in Luke 10, he said Mary has chosen the good part. Chosen. It wasn't accident. It wasn't happenstance. She made a choice. Life is about choices. You know, you see people maybe that have a good marriage and some that don't. Say, well, they just got a good one. Well, there's an element, of course, of a person's character, but oftentimes it's a matter, that's a result of choices that have been made down through the years about priorities, for example, in life. Same thing with a job, or same thing with other things in life. It's a matter of choices. Certainly that's true in our relationship to God. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 30. In verse 19, here Moses is preaching to the people. They're getting ready to go into the land of promise. They've been through the 38 years of wandering, right across the Jordan, the land of promise. But look what he said. I call heaven and earth to witness against you to this day. I've set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. He just preached this sermon, telling them about their options. So he said, choose. Choose. What are you going to do? It's up to you. God's not going to make you. Choose life. You're familiar very much with Joshua 24, aren't you? After Joshua had led the conquest of the land, he's reaching the end of his ministry. He has the people before them. What does he tell them? What did Moses say? Choose. What does Joshua tell the people? 24:15. If it's disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose. You choose who you're going to serve. Me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Men in this audience, you are to be the spiritual leader. Choose. You decide to make a choice about what's going to be important. And if you chose to read Psalm 19 and 30, I'd like to know where you found our 11 and 30. Psalm 11 and 30, I bet you had a hard time finding that one. It's 119. Left off a 9 there. By the way, I did not choose to do that as a trick question. 119 and 30. I have chosen the faithful way. I have placed your ordinances before me. And then Proverbs chapter 1. And 29, they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They got busy. Go read that setting about this woman crying out in the street. Everybody's going about their business. I'll get wisdom another time. They didn't make the choice. When the storm came, they weren't ready. Why? Choices. Choices back there. That's why. You're going to face trials. The devil will never give up trying to get you one way or the other. It's the choices you make today about your priorities that may prepare you for the storm that's tomorrow. Matter of choices. And so Jesus said about her choice, what? About Mary's choice. It will not be taken away from her. He supported her. You make the right choices. Jesus will support you. People may not understand. Maybe your house won't be the nicest. Maybe you won't have the best job. Maybe you won't have the big bank account. Maybe your yard may not be the nicest one on the block. But you make the right choices. And Jesus will support you. It will not be taken away from her. You know, you think about that. About Mary. The choices we make. It's time to assemble with the saints. You know what people say, don't you? Where's the verse in the Bible that says I got to attend every assembly? There's none. Whether you want to attend every assembly is going to depend on something else. A choice you made before time for assembly. That's what's going to make the difference. About serving. You know, in Matthew 25, in that Judgment Day scene, it said, you did not do it to me. They didn't choose to serve. Same as with giving. And in the incident about Macedonia and Corinth, it says that Macedonia first gave themselves to the Lord. You know why they gave so well? They had made a choice. That choice was to put Christ first in their lives. That affects our giving. You know, if we just wait till we get to the building and see what I'll write, or it's Sunday morning, let me see what I got in my pocket. Forget it. Spiritual growth. Same thing in 2 Peter 1. And I wish I had time to develop it, but I don't. You know, whether the conflict is material, whether it's family, Jesus said you got to put me before your family. even for life itself. We've got to make that choice. All right, our last question. What do you learn about Jesus from this incident? What did you write down? Very good. Jesus wants us to seek Him first. No question about that. Jesus wants us to have these priorities, to understand the tremendous value of His mission and His kingdom. Why does He want that? I'll tell you why He loves us. He knows that's best for us. That's why. What else?
Jesus cares enough about when we fail Him to rebuke us.
Very good. That's a good point. Loves us enough to rebuke us when we need it and praise us when we need it as well. And it's interesting about His rebuke. He fit His rebuke to the person. How did He rebuke the Pharisees in Matthew 23? Severely. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. Boy, that's strong. Strong. But He didn't do Martha that way. It's like John the Baptist. We studied about John the Baptist. All he said was, "Blessed is he who doesn't take offense in me." You go tell John what you see. It was very mild. We can learn that lesson. You fit your reproof or your rebuke to the person. Some people are trying. They're just, Martha's a good woman. She's got her focus skewed. And so you see that with Jesus. You also see that Jesus was willing to reprove in front of others. Talking to my wife about the lesson. She suggested this. I thought that was a good point. But right here in this room full of people, He didn't pull Martha off to the side. He wasn't trying to embarrass Martha. It's for her good, but it's also good for everybody in the room. And today, people will get all upset with Jesus. What did you do that in front of everybody for? Because we're so full of pride. We're worried about our pride. You never see that in Martha. Mary and Martha were some of Jesus' dearest friends. And yet, that didn't stop Him from reproving them. Would we do that? Do we change it if it's a dear friend? You see this sometimes in preachers. Well, they'll jump down another preacher's throat. But if he's one of their buddies, it's a different story. You see this in politicians. Friendship is not the criteria. It's right and wrong. Another thing I put down, He did not allow good intentions to justify bad choices. Mary had good intentions, but it did not justify her bad choices. You may have written other things down, but our time is up. Appreciate your good comments this morning, your attention to what we're studying. The Lord willing, in our next class, September 23rd, I'll put the lesson in the back if you don't have them. Nathaniel, Israelite indeed, in whom is no deceit, Jesus said. So we can learn from that. Thank you again for your good attention this morning.